This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
You're listening to AvWeb's continuing coverage of Aero 2030 in Friedrichshafen, Germany. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting. I'm with Michael Kraft, General Manager of Lycoming. Michael, this week, Lycoming released a whole new round of 91-octane engine approvals. And walking around the show here, we've been talking to people about fuel and the availability of 100 low lead and 91, which is sold by Total in Europe. Still a confused situation. Where are we now? You've been following this, I know, intimately for 4 years now. So what's up?
So, yes, you're correct, Paul. On Wednesday of this week, we issued the latest version of our service instruction 1070, which put a very large number of engines into the approval stage or into the approved use on UL-91. In addition, if you take a look at that, those same engines, to a large extent, were also approved on the 93 AKI fuel with the ordering recommendations on that as well. So we put a substantial number of engines into that category on UL-91. This was in response largely to Lycoming seeing in the EU Total starting to distribute the fuel on a broader basis. What we're responding to is, you know, we're in a little bit of a chicken and egg situation. It's a supply and demand problem, and as long as there are a limited number of aircraft approved to use an alternate fuel, like the unleaded 91 grade, you know, the opportunity for the fuel producers to put it out there is limited. So this round, we covered a substantial number of engines. It captures a large amount of the installed base within the EU. We've done that, and now we will watch and see what happens on the distribution side. You know, Lycoming doesn't distribute fuel. We don't produce fuel. We're not in any type of partnership with a fuel company. We're just trying to work this equation both sides to give the consumer the greatest number of options, and then we watch how production and distribution react. At the end of the day, you know, people just may not realize in the U.S. how different the pricing structure it is to fly in Europe versus the U.S. Fuel is tremendously more expensive. It's not necessarily an availability issue, but it's a can I get fuel at reasonable cost issue. And you're dealing with different tax structures, different incentive structures, which really increase the cost of flying overall, not just from fuel, but from landing fees and everything else. So our actions on 1070 are really to try to prod the other side of the market, the supply chain side for fuels and lubricants, into seeing what they do next. And then we'll continue to operate in this mode until we arrive at a stable solution. But I think it's overall a good development for the consumer, and we'll be very interested in seeing what happens over the next months with this latest round of approvals.
Now, speaking of the chicken, or maybe it's the egg, I don't know which one it is, but talking to pilots around here and some of the manufacturers, Total's 91 UL is not really as widely distributed as I thought, and part of that has to do with demand. What about in the U.S.? A year ago, you thought maybe there was a niche market for it. What do you think now?
Well, you know, first on the distribution, I think Total, once again, our observations are that, you know, Total is concentrating, has concentrated its distribution where they've seen the broadest demand. You know, the number of engine approvals that we had the last time wasn't as broad, mainly limited to the four-cylinder 360 engines. We've now approved a much broader range, including some of the 540s down to the 320s and 235s. So it'll be interesting to see how their distribution model changes based on that. With respect to the U.S., I still think there might be some niche applications to it. The difficulty in the U.S. is that you have a much larger percentage of aircraft which have a higher octane demand. The other unique item is that within the EU, EASA took the action to enable the aircraft to be legal for use with UL-91 on the engine approval. FAA has not taken that action, nor have they recognized EASA's authority on the SIB. So in the U.S., you don't have any UL-91 approvals on aircraft. And until there are approvals out there on aircraft, either via FAA action broadly, a manufacturer's action on the TC, or an STC, you don't have demand. So the U.S. really, you know, the demand for unleaded fuel in the U.S. is really limited to the EAA and Peterson STCs. And quite frankly, the volume of those aircraft approved isn't large enough to spawn a lot of distribution of higher quality MOGAS. So we're dealing with a little bit of different situation on the chicken and egg in the U.S., and that'll be interesting. It'll just be interesting to see how this evolves.
What about real MOGAS? By real MOGAS, I mean what you call punk gas. Is there any hope for this? Because it is really substantially cheaper for pilots who are flying 50 to 100 hours a year. And we hear through email and through the shows we attend, there's real interest in possible demand for that. And I say possible because I'm not sure how established it is.
Pump gas is a real difficult item because pump gas is continually changing based on emissions regulations and state and the U.S. state mandates for the inclusion of biomass as well as federal pressures there. And Europe is the same thing. What we're observing is that pump gas is going to be increasingly unsuitable. Particularly as there's pressure to move to a 15% ethanol content, there's a tremendous, there's a big information gap in people understanding how potentially destabilizing these increased amounts of ethanol are in the fuel. It is not only destabilizing for the fuel that has the ethanol in it, it's destabilizing for the base stock that the fuel producers are doing on that. So if you know, Lycoming continues to caution people is that there's a difference between pump gas and automotive fuels. There's no reason why a correctly controlled automotive fuel or automotive blend stock fuel couldn't be feasible for general aviation. But we continue to caution folks that pump gas is quite variable. It varies by season, by geographic region. And now we're seeing another twist to the story, which is increased levels of ethanol, which change a lot of the behaviors of that fuel. And one thing that we really don't want to have in aviation is as unknowns in the equation of how we fly. So, motor gasoline probably has a place. Pump gas, we just caution folks, you got to be careful with that.
And you're not a big believer in the E0 supply?
I think that an E0 supply could arrive. Once again, it's a supply and demand situation. We obviously have approved a fuel that we're criticized a little bit of where can you get it. To be blunt about it, we've put a recipe out there in our SI 1070 that we think is a controlled type of fuel. And hopefully the producers out there and the people with tanks at the FBOs can take close notice of that. And I think that could be a viable solution, but it's going to be a niche product. It's not for everybody, but it could satisfy a certain segment of it. But it's, once again, a supply and demand equation. We're similar to the UL-91. We are, and to be blunt about it, we're trying to send a message via the engine side of what's possible. And we'll see where the production and distribution ends up on the other side.
Now, Air 20 is set up to start certifying fuels. How's that process working?
From the FAA recommendations, there's a recommendation for streamlined certification. What's actually resulted is not only has Air 20 been established, but Air 21. So you have Air 20 covering basically the engine side and Air 21 covering the aircraft side. From Lycoming's perspective, this has been a real benefit and a real, very well-implemented recommendation from the ARC that was formed. When we had to move our 1070S through, lots of cooperation from the ACO, lots of support from the Air 20 side in terms of getting that through. This has been you can really tell that the FAA has really implemented those offices with a very positive attitude towards facilitating unleaded transition. And I got to compliment them. That's really working well.
Any hit from the sequester?
We are seeing a hit from the sequester. We know that our federal employees at all levels are being, furloughed, mandating furloughs. Has it been a hit to our throughput? I got to say no at the moment. Will it be? I can't imagine that there won't be. I mean, just the fact that you're not going to have certain people in the office some days, if you need a signature or something, it's going to be there. Have we seen anything on the FISDO side? Flight safety, no. We haven't seen anything. Have we seen a slowdown? Not really, but I'm sure there's going to be some communication interruption at some point.
Last question, a lot of diesel around here, is there, and seems to be interest in Europe. I've seen a couple of new initiatives here. Anything coming from Lycoming on diesel?
Interesting question. You know, I think that obviously it is publicly announced that we're providing the service and support for the SMA engine on that front. You know, diesel engines are, you know, just like an automotive, it's going to make sense to a consumer to buy a diesel engine or a gasoline engine based on how they use the aircraft, what they do, where they're operating it. That's not going to be any different in the aircraft. I think the consumers will have a choice. In Europe, you have a whole different dynamic in terms of expense and operating structure. And it may make more sense in Europe. And it's certainly in Africa, missionary work and stuff, it's going to make a lot of sense because you just don't have the availability. But it's going to come down to the consumer making a choice as to what's best for them. And they just got to look at the total equation, just like you're buying a truck or something else.
I'm going to take that as a maybe.
You're welcome to extrapolate, Paul, but I think the fact is we are providing service and support for it. And it's going to work in certain applications and others.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you.
Paul Bertarelli reporting from Aero 2013. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.